Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Philip Gilfus, and I'm joined here, as always, with my fellow crash survivors, Daniel Prue and Darren Moser. Gentlemen, how goes your Trek life?
It's day 12. Still stuck with these two guys, still only able to talk about Star Trek. Sorry, guys, I was just recording my personal log. Yeah, Star Trek is great. I love talking about it, and... You know, it's year 30 of TNG, and oh,
I feel like you're doing like a 90s dating video.
Am I not? I like long holographic walks on the beach. I'm a next gener, and Picard.
Well, it's
all
1990s,
the way.
Of course. You know.
Wait, but. Do you think that if Starfleet personnel actually were stranded on a planet or something, that they're supposed to continue recording their logs? Like, is that like an indefinite
order? That's all there is to do, Daniel.
Okay, I was just wondering.
I mean, that's why Odo and Quark have to haul that transmitter up to the top of the mountain, not to get rescued, but
just
to transmit their logs.
Yeah.
not even Starfleet, too. So.
That's how dedicated they are.
Well, speaking of how stranded we are, like a good episode of Gilligan's Island, we have special co-hosts that come on randomly. And so for this week, we're going to be talking about the theatricality of Star Trek. I know that sounds like a lot, but basically what we're going to be talking about is, are there certain episodes of Star Trek that could be put on the stage? And, you know, I found myself like Q in that episode of Voyager going like, theater, who do I know that knows about theater? And then I looked in the other room, and then I saw Jessica Nunn here. And so, Jessica, you could say hi.
Hello, everybody.
So now, Jessica, she is the, for those who don't know, she is the Cassidy to my Ben, the Jadzia to my Worf, the Data to my Spot. Wait, that last one doesn't work. But Jessica, do you want to sort of introduce, other than you know, being affianced to me, why I think you're the perfect person talking about theater?
Well, I think at the moment being affianced to you is the most important thing I do right now, isn't it? I run a theater company. I'm the artistic director for an interactive theater company. So we do theater in interesting spaces, or in this particular case, in space.
Ooh, that's a segue if ever I heard one.
Ooh. Right. And, you know, like every sci-fi, you have to add space to it. So this is going to be space theater.
Space theater. Ooh. Right. Theater of the stars.
Mm-hmm. And then just to add your international flavor, where did you first start a theater company for our listeners?
The first theater company that I started, that I was the artistic director of, was in England, and I ran that for 2 years. We did lots of interesting pub theater, theater pub crawls, anything that had to do with beer and theater, we were in.
It's a little theater called The Globe. You might have heard of it.
Fair. I went to The Globe, if that counts.
And I'd just like to note, she is the only one drinking during this podcast.
By the way, I do want to say thank you, because I just learned that affianced, is that how you say it, is a word. I had no idea that was a thing.
That's way easier than, like, fiancé, but one spelled with two E's and one spelled with one E, because that's not confusing at all.
Well, it was a crossword puzzle clue, and so we've been using it since we discovered that.
Before that, we were just using betrothed.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, that one I knew, but this one's new.
Yeah, I was
so this is
doing
exciting.
The inventory of her dowry. It was pretty. It was pretty cool.
There are camels all over the living room.
You must have a big living room.
No, just not a lot of camels. Not really.
Or really baby camels or something.
Space camels. That's
space camels.
What a great segue.
That's right. But, yeah, so what it is I picked some episodes for both Jessica and Daniel and Darren and myself to watch.
It's not a both.
To kind of look at and see what would be, you know, and this is the parameters I gave Jessica to kind of look at when she was watching it. Like, okay, is this an episode that could actually be put on stage? And, you know, because having a lot of director experience, I know she has that eye. And then are there parts that really would not work on stage? And if not, maybe how can we redo that? And then maybe that's where we can kind of rewrite some scenes to make it work on the stage. So, as usual, according to the SETI Alpha 3 bylaws, we are going to start first with Enterprise.
See, I'm just picturing, though, Philip, as you said, you were setting up the parameters for this episode, and I'm like, I hope you spoke very clearly into the computer, because the last thing you want to do, you know, I want to create a theater program that is capable
smarter than data.
Jeez, now we're doomed. There's no backstage. There's no curtain. There's no way out.
But I'm not crazy. Oh, we'll get to that. But the first one is Enterprise, because I can only say it with Tripp's accent. Enterprise with A Night in Sick Bay. And I guess this kind of jumped in my mind because, you know, it's right there on the tin in the title. It's mostly, for the most part, takes place in one scene, sick bay. I mean, there are some other ones. But that's kind of why I thought Enterprise would kind of look. And I'm going to do a summary off the top of my head for those who don't remember. For one thing, I was actually surprised. Like, I knew Enterprise, you know, season 3 was very serialized. But when I was looking at the summary for the episodes, including this one, they all kind of just bleed into each other. I mean, in a good way, very serialized. Because this is actually, like, a sequel to the prior episode where, like, you know, they offend the aliens. And it's like the whole episode, and they find out, oh, we've offended them by eating in front of them. But anyway, this episode picks up. They've insulted the aliens again somehow. And then it turns out it was because his dog peed on a tree. So
a 300-year-old religious tree, to be fair, but
right.
Wait, the tree isn't religious. Well, I would say the tree is probably.
I mean, some religions would say the tree is very religious, but you know,
the tree is probably agnostic.
I think so.
Or maybe it's probably Wiccan. I think it's probably into nature.
Oh, that would make sense. Yeah, I can buy that.
But anyway, so and I'm doing a quick and dirty summary here. Archer and Dr. Phlox find out Porthos is sick. And so Porthos goes to sick bay, and then there's a lot of tension with Archer with the aliens, and then there's tension that comes out in the episode between Archer and T'Pol. And then, long story short, at the end of the day, Archer learns a life lesson from Phlox, Porthos gets better, there's a cute dog, bark, bark, and there's a really cool I apologize by using a chainsaw and being half naked scene. So that's pretty much it. Is that a fair summary, guys?
Yeah. So Star Trek.
Yeah.
Anytime someone throws up and or says something about, I guess, new discovery, like, this is just so off the wall. Have you watched Star Trek? Because we got some gems, let me just tell you.
I will say that there's one correction, Philip. You said there's a cute dog, which is true, but I would say it's more of a cute stuffed dog for 90% of this episode.
For most of it, yeah.
Right.
Which may be actually very useful if you're going to try to put that
on
stage.
At least it wasn't a CGI enhanced dog, you know, like, you know, they make his mouth move or his eyes. I don't know.
So, well, first, Jessica, I'll go with what were your initial thoughts about the episode, just overall. Actually, I know your thoughts, but
yes,
anyway, what were your overall?
This was the only episode. To your
mind. This was the only episode I watched with her. All the other ones she saw on her own.
So. Yeah. And I need to preface this by saying that I haven't watched a lot of Enterprise, but I think I'm going to like it when we get to that in your rewatch. I love Scott Bakula. Think he's fantastic. Hated this episode with every inch of my being. Hated it. I thought the whole thing was too contrived. It was all about let's build this sexual tension that isn't there. And let's make the whole thing about sex, which I was worried about the dog. I didn't want anybody thinking about sex. I needed people worrying about the dog.
Mm-hmm. What was this episode in y'all's pantheons of Enterprise?
That's a really personal question, Philip. But
well, Darren, I think it's really interesting why I think of your opinion is so important to me. That's really...
I'm trying to figure out how that works with... I'm like, with the events in this episode particularly, but like, I don't have a dog, Philip. What are you talking about? But, yeah, it's... Because this was, like, what, early? This was early Enterprise, right? Like, season...
Well, season two, episode five, yeah.
And it's... It's all right. Again, I really like the, I guess it's B. I don't know what's the A plot or what's the B plot. It's really unclear. But I think the plot with the dog and all of the sickbay stuff is kind of fun. You get a little bit of Grouchy Archer, which is always kind of fun because,
you get a lot of Grouchy Archer.
You get a lot of Grouchy Archer, yeah. And Phlox, you know, I mean, he's one of many people's favorite characters. He's just wonderfully played and acted, and he's just unique. And he is who he is, and he doesn't apologize for anything. He's like, oh, I'm cutting my toenails at 2 a.m, and it's the most disgusting thing you've ever seen? Well, you didn't have to be here, Captain. You could go back to your cabin. But,
and he feeds his toenail clippings to the...
Yeah. It's like, oh, my, you know, Lunian night moth got loose. Well, sorry, Captain. Like, this is a normal night in sickbay. But, no, I mean, I did like its encapsulatedness, you know, in sickbay. I think, but a lot of Grouchy Archer. And, I mean, I was never a big fan of, like, why do we need... I mean, I know why they included... the decon gel in this series? I mean, anyway, I think I'm sure there's many other things that Daniel will fill in. Off to you, Daniel.
Well, I mean, I don't have much to say about the
decon. You have a lot of decon chamber dreams, Daniel?
I can't say that I do. I like the episode mostly because in my head it's just about Porthos, and Porthos is awesome, so... That's all I think about when I kind of forget about the other stuff that they shove in there. And I also like the Phlox stuff, of course. You know, here we get to see a lot of what makes him strange and interesting and stuff. And he talks about not having pets on his world and stuff. That kind of stuff is all interesting to me. And
very
I like
sought after, Captain.
Yeah. And I like the whole construct of it, like offending them doing something totally innocuous that we wouldn't think of as offensive at all, but obviously you kind of have to think about those things differently when you're out in space meeting new peoples. So I like the episode for the most part, but yeah, I guess the parts that they shoved in there with T'Pol, I never think of them unless I've like just watched that episode, and it does feel kind of meh.
I mean, once you start having dreams, like dream sequences, it's like no, we don't need dream sequences. That I think
so I'm just gonna throw it out there. I think every male crew member in Enterprise we see having a dream about T'Pol
at some point.
I would assume so. I would have to think about that.
I mean, that's what Porthos was dreaming about in that tank. So,
what do stuffed dogs think dream of? Yeah.
I think a way that would have been more fun of an episode, rather than that. I mean, I would have made it a challenge of what he has to do to apologize. So instead of just, I really don't want to do it, I don't want to do it, I don't want, like, saying I don't want to do it for, like, 90% of the episode, he realizes he needs to do it in the beginning, and then it becomes one of those, like, bigger or better trade-up schemes, where it's like, we need this crystal, but you have to get it from this planet, and they'll only give it to you if you give them this, which you can only get from this planet, and they, like, have to hop planets, and they're, like, have to do, like, 5 complex trades to get, I think that would have been way more engaging.
Is this the stream of commerce?
Yeah, it's like the Great River. Exactly. I was actually thinking of that DS9 episode where exactly it becomes so convoluted and he's like, do we really need the warp, you know, injectors, but which don't seem to inject much in their compartment in the closet, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, there's ways that this episode could have been better, but for why it was picked for a single setting and just revolving that, like, yeah, I could totally picture this as like a play, as a one room play. Everything else happens, you know, either in a log or off screen or off stage. So it does have that.
Sure. All right. So Jessica, what are your thoughts of how this works as a stage production, or how this would work as a stage production?
Well, of course, my first concern, opening scene when everybody is oiling everybody down, my first concern is you never want to work with animals on stage. Mm-hmm. Now, as Daniel pointed out, the animal is stuffed through most of the episode and lies quite passively. But then you also have things flying in the air. I think those would be my biggest concerns. Because I tend to do interactive theater, when I was watching it, I was thinking about the stage at the back of the space and then also using the audience area, the front of the space, so you could have sort of the sick bay at the back and any flashbacks and things at the front, so that you're not having to do these huge fly-in and fly-out set changes. So that, in that sense, it would work. But I think you lose some of the delightfulness of the sick bay with all of the, you know, the weird things happening with the animals getting loose and the dog being just adorable. So,
well, now we have seen Animal on stage before. Wizard of Oz.
We have, yes.
He was very, seemed very well trained, he or she.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very cute. Yeah, I mean, I think you have potential with the dog. I don't know where you're going to find a flying bat thing.
See, I would have done the flying bat using environmental projection. You could just project the entire back wall of sick bay and then have it fly around, and then you get all your characters.
Like a Tinkerbell almost?
Yeah, or? Like a Tinkerbell, or either, like, yeah, like a directed little spotlight, or just, yeah, do environmental projection on the back walls, you know, with a wide throw in the ceiling, and then you would be able to have anything you want fly around. And they're just, then you're going off of your actor's reaction to nothing.
Mm. Yes. Is this the moment wherein I say, that's so L.A.?
Yes.
Is that your theater company has way more money than mine does.
I didn't say it was cheap. I just said it was an idea.
But, yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. And as you say, sort of the Tinkerbell idea, you can have, even if it's just a pinpoint of light
right.
that flies around. Yeah, that's a good point, and that would be interesting.
Yeah, because I like, there was one point... I mean, all the flock stuff, like him, I don't know how you do the tongue. I mean, it easily. I mean, you can do something with the false tongue. But I thought my favorite part from a theatrical perspective was when he was in shadow. He had the blanket over him.
Behind the curtain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you could really do a lot more, like, instead of just the TV, just, like, you had, like, maybe 10 seconds. But you could do, like, 30 seconds of him, like, you can, like, the cutting of the toenails, because you obviously can't do a close-up shot in stage, but you can kind of do the faux, these long toenails being thrown off, and... Everyone's going like, what the heck is it? And you have, you know, the Archer character going, what the heck is it? And then he's like, oh, just taking off my toenails, Captain.
I think it would be interesting to draw in the audience. You could give everyone in the front row blankets, like they're tucking in for a night in sick bay as well.
Oh, everyone gets like a pillow or something.
An audience member in a show where it was a 6-hour show, and they put us all to bed for 20 minutes in bunk beds. And tucked us in.
Did you to actually nap?
That's so North Carolina.
that sounds like England.
This was at the Edinburgh Fringe, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning at that point. So it is quite possible I napped for those 20 nice. Minutes.
But what were some other parts you thought were good for stage? Or conversely, some parts you thought were really bad for stage.
I think you're going to struggle a little bit with some of the flashbacks because you need to set the place very quickly. I mean, you don't want huge sets flying in and out for a scene that's 30 seconds, 60 seconds, something like that. So if you're going to do those things... They need to be simplified considerably. And of course, let me reiterate, I would take out all of the sexual tension nonsense. I just thought it was not conducive to moving the story along. How's that?
But I just thought that was the best part. I mean, best part of the...
See what you did there. See it.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. You definitely want it simplified, and there's a lot of little scenes where they're on the bridge or they're, you know, in quarters, and you could easily move all those conversations into sick bay and literally make it a one room. And the only time, you know, that they're outside, I mean, you actually could even not do the last scene where he's actually doing the event. It just ends with him actually deciding to leave, and you literally don't leave sick bay except for, like you said, a couple of, oh gosh, I'm always forget, forward stage, whatever's closer to the audience, you know, like the flashbacks or the, you know, dreams, or you could just take the dreams out. I mean, they weren't good dreams, so.
Well, this is true, yeah.
Well, you could even, and I don't know, again, this is how much you can have. If you had, I don't know how much you would like to rely on video, but if you could do it at the end, maybe because you can emphasize the talk that Phlox has with Archer, and so maybe Phlox is in sickbay, like, oh, you know, I hear, you know, Archer's doing his apology and he pulls up the screen and you see the apology on the, you know, the, that scene on video as like he's monitoring the planet down below or something or whatever.
Or just so could... Archer could be practicing it, you know, and he's like having to, and he's telling all, he's listing all the things because they built it up as a reveal. Like they're not going to show you what he has to do. And all you get is the little line of, you know, do we have a chainsaw? You know, and, but you could also have Archer instead just actually saying, okay, I'm going to need this and this. And then all the audience is going, wow, that's like a Rube Goldberg machine you're building down there.
Yeah, because I think the only part you need for a live dog is to bring him there, because the rest of the time he's either in the box, not the, you know, and you could
do a puppet.
Yeah, because you, like, you have the gloves, so you could point it that way, you know, where you have the gloves down facing downstage, and so, or some configuration so where even when Archer's petting him or whatever, you can't necessarily see up close that that's not a moving dog, because he's supposed to be unconscious most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
And then maybe at the end have him, the real dog again, you know, just to be like, he's all right, folks.
Yeah, just that. Well, and I think it seems to me from this episode that Porthos is mostly used for his cuteness factor anyway. And that's the only reason you'd want him on stage, particularly at the end.
Reminds me of Shakespeare in Love. I'm throwing a bit about a dog, you know.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm sure there's more we can say, but we're going to move on at least a couple decades, and that's into the original series. And I was trying to think of what's theatrical. Oh, let's pick one of the million Shakespeare ones. So I picked the most obvious, Conscience of the King. For those who don't remember, and this actually does have an Enterprise connection, depending on how nerdy you are. But that this is a quick summary. A friend of Kirk's invites the Enterprise to come see a play performed by a troupe of Shakespearean actors. And then the friend's like, hey, dude, that's totally Codos the Executioner. And man, I thought he died, but he's not. He's right there. And then the whole episode is that guy ends up getting mysteriously killed, and Kirk basically gets the troop to get on the Enterprise, and he puts on his mojo with the suspect's daughter. And then lo and behold, Kirk and Spock and McCoy and everyone else is like, oh, that's definitely him. And then it turns out Lieutenant Riley is also a witness as well. And then at the end, it turns out that the daughter's the one who's been killing people left and right. And she goes crazy bananas when she accidentally kills her dad. And scene. Exit pursued by bear.
I would just like to interject and say that I don't think that this guy, Thomas Leighton, I wrote his name down, does not get mysteriously killed, because his very first line in the show is using the word Macbeth inside a theater. We know from the very beginning that this man is going to die. So it was not a mystery to me at all when he turned up dead. I'm like, well, that's what
when
you
he said it three
Macbeth
times
in
looking
theater.
In the mirror, that's when you know it was all bad. Yeah, it wasn't going good.
Exactly.
All right. So you, Darren, what was your general opinion of this?
Conscience of the King. This was, I mean, it does have some good Kirk moments. I think a lot of people look at TOS, the original series, and they overgeneralize Kirk, that he's always this, you know, giant character he's always doing. But there are actually, you know, if you can find them, these little moments where, you know, William Shatner is actually acting really well, and he's actually emoting really well. And yeah, it's a little, you know, the little beam of light on his eyes, and it's, you know, it's very stylized, and it's what we expect. But there are some great moments that he has. You can tell he's actually, you know, trying to, you know, build this relationship with the daughter, but he's also, you know, again, it's another Star Trek episode where character A isn't going to inform character B on what his plans are, and thus the episode is probably twice as long as it needed to be. If he actually talked to Spock, this, like, that would probably solve 90% of the problems of this episode. But those moments were good. I only hope that there can be a troupe of traveling actors, you know, in the future that would do, you know, Shakespeare, not in the original Klingon, but in the original, you know, the original
Federation standard.
Federation standard. Yeah, the first Federation standard. But, you know, it's a fun little story. I think Riley steals the show, though. Sitting down in engineering, Oh, woe is me. If only I had but a song. My eye earns, you know, yearns for the stars, but my heart, you know, needs comfort. Uhura, please sing me. It's like, what? And it's basically, he's very dramatic, but, you know, and then fortunately they have the intership calm. I would think it would have been funny if she accidentally broadcasted that to the entire ship instead of just engineering, but so
was the demotion, I'm trying to remember, was it from like environmental controls to engineering? I'm like, engineering sounds way cooler.
He was was in communications, okay. So which also explains how he would know Uhura a lot, because
that's true,
she would be over that, right. But yeah, I mean, again, you know, just tell him, hey, you know, you're not being demoted, but I need to temporarily transfer you here, you know, if something's up, you know, listen to me, I'm your captain. Problem solved right there.
In your log as a reprimand, it would simply be
a transfer. I'm sorry if our friendship is over. but the real, you know, the real criminal is McCoy, who obviously, great bedside manner, you know, the door is wide open to the rest of sick bay, and he's like, patient X, probably gonna die. It's looking real bad. Oh, hey, Riley, how are you doing? Ooh, that didn't go very
awkward.
Well. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll see if that's a technical Shakespearean aside. Daniel, what are your general thoughts of con science of the
You
game?
Know, it, Darren, you when you were talking about, oh, you know, William Shatner actually gets, you know, there's more depth to his character. When I was watching it, all I could think of was how it reaffirmed those stereotypes when he's like walks up to that blonde girl at the party and is like, hey, you want to go for a walk and skip out of this official function? Let's go. And okay, let me get this straight, because this bothered me the whole episode. Kirk, okay, presumably right before this meeting, the daughter, I can't remember her name, kills this man with the face thing, the face mask, right?
Yeah. The disfigured man, yeah.
Which, by the way, was the most silly dramatic reveal ever. But anyways, so she kills this guy, dumps his body in the woods, and then goes on a romantic stroll with Kirk and leads him directly to his dead body. I don't understand. Like, that bothered me the entire episode. Like, this woman is this dense that she would... But anyways, I guess it doesn't really matter. So the episode is pretty good. It's okay. There's just a bunch of, like, coincidences like that. And I always wonder... We constantly get these different backstories with Kirk. I feel like he had a really crazy, busy life before the Enterprise, because he was on this planet with this massacre and all these other things. It was okay. It was nice. Having not seen it for a long time, I kind of remember the daughter being involved, but I forgot that she was the one that had killed everybody. So I thought it was a pretty interesting twist to bring into it, but it was all right.
Yeah, and I do want to say the romance storyline. I mean, like you say, like, oh, it's so stereotype, but then like, oh, this is here it is. But for one thing, she's not alien, right? Because the thing is like, oh, he's always seducing the alien woman. She's human. But also, I mean, I think it's so straightforward, because, you know, at the end, it is played for being straightforward, that, you know, he wasn't just using her, like, he was, you know, really cared for her or whatever. That's how they play it at the end. But like, this is really one of the few times you see him, I guess, being authentic. Like, he's usually trying to, the reason he's, you know, macking on an alien lady is because he wants something, and I guess technically he does it with her to get to the father, but I thought it was really genuine. I mean, I do love the swingy theme music in the background, you know.
I don't know.
Hey, baby.
Well, that's a good question, Daniel. Why didn't she just try to kill Kirk after he discovered the body? Because he's on her list, and no one else is around, but... yeah, but I think winning line has to go to when they're in the shuttle observation deck or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she's just like pressed up against the bulkhead and she's like, the power of the ship.
Oh my God.
Surging.
It's throbbing of the engines. Oh, and I'm like, oh my Lord.
Am I allowed to watch this episode with my parents? No, my favorite thing though is when her first thing's like, she's like, did you order the soft flight? I'm like, no, that's usually what we use when women are in the scene. That's
but if this was a Geordi date, yes. But Captain Picard, he's smoother than that. So,
but what'd you think of this overall, Jessica?
I liked this one. Struggled a little bit with the acting choices, but overall I really liked it because it kept my brain going. It's the one I took the most notes on. Because there's a constant, you know, you've got your three main Shakespeare, you know, we go back and forth with Macbeth and Hamlet and Julius Caesar. And then the fact that she's called Lenore, which is all very Edgar Allan Poe. And then you've got the whole Greek theater. This is a real Electra complex, because when they first take the scene and the father is playing Macbeth and the daughter is playing Lady Macbeth, and it's kind of gross.
Because it's a father-daughter, yeah.
Yeah, and so then it turns out that she is sort of overprotective, almost in this weird sort of, you know, I may or may not have killed my mother so that I could marry my father kind of way. So I enjoyed it from a theatrical standpoint a lot.
Mm-hmm. And what would you think, how much of this, because there will be a lot of scene changes, admittedly, depends how you did it, but how do you think this would work on stage?
Again, I think it's doable, particularly if you've got a dual set, like you've got the stage and then you've got the audience area, so that you can play two different areas with relative ease. I think it is doable. I think you'd have to move things around, like the walking out, the walk that they take. Would sort of need to be just less set-y, which I think TOS struggled with a little bit all the way through. Like, at one point I was like, where did all the sets for this play come from? Does this traveling troupe travel with all of these massive sets for all of the different Shakespeare plays? So I think if you pared it down, you know, I think it could work.
You're saying a traveling troupe would be a little bit lighter.
I think a traveling troupe would be a little bit lighter. Yeah.
And it was interesting, I guess, like you said, all this, I didn't catch all those references that you said to all the things that mixed in there. But like when you said acting choices, who were you specifically talking about?
Well, one of the things that I noted down was when Kirk gave a CSI Miami look. You know, and I think it was at the moment that the guy is talking about Kodos the Executioner, and Kirk gives this off in the distance look that's so intense, and I kind of wish he'd had sunglasses to take off. You know,
this is a great plan. Let's execute it.
Are you Kodos?
Yeah, so it felt a little stilted, but I think to a certain extent it's a little bit theatrical in its very nature. The acting choices, they're either, you know, they tend to be a little bit bigger than you'd necessarily need for close-up work.
And then this is a question within the show within the show. How do you think the plays within the show were staged, like the Macbeth? And we only saw a few seconds, but the Hamlet, because I thought that was interesting, the use of the mask made me think of the Voyager episode
and the 20 people watching, because that's all they care about.
Look, there's only 400 people on the ship. What do you want?
I mean, in the motion picture, you got that giant room,
room.
Yeah,
I am impressed that all of the ships have theaters. I say kudos to that. Emphasis on the arts. I like
Starfleet.
I like it in Starfleet.
I think the Enterprise actually has a bowling alley as well.
It does, yep.
Yeah.
And a swimming pool.
It's the 60s.
Yet the Enterprise Z is the Hilton of the stars. That's all I'm saying.
And they have to use 10 forward for that. So.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It feels very... both productions, the Macbeth and then going into the Hamlet. And also, by the way, I thought it was really strange that the father played Macbeth and then played Hamlet's father. I thought that was a real bad demotion for him.
Yeah, well, because he's supposed to be the director, isn't he? I think he's the director and the actor, so...
Yeah, so I felt bad
for him. The director's
not
going to be like, no, I'll just do the ghost in the beginning, call it a day.
Yeah.
Though he's a little old for Hamlet, so...
Well, yeah, he was probably a little old for Macbeth, too. But never mind. I thought that they were both very representative of 1960s BBC Shakespeare.
Okay.
You know, the stuff that you see with Judi Dench and things like that. They tend to be very theatrical and not as trying to connect with a modern audience as a lot of times you see the shows these days.
And what did you all think of the Kodos character? Because according, and this, like I said, this is like nerdy canon fine print stuff. According to In a Mirror Darkly, when you see Hoshi Sato's personnel file, she died on that planet. Like, she was on the Tarsus, whatever.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised he wasn't Klingon, because Kodos sounds like a Klingon name.
Right.
And yet the Klingons in TOS are look like people with, you know, a little bit darker skin and mustaches, basically. So I was a little surprised that that wasn't the case, because, you know, everyone understands why we hate Klingons for some reason. But
he wasn't human.
Yeah.
Well, and I do love the quick turnaround, because they keep saying, like, you know, where the history of Kodos the Executioner ends, whatever the guy's name.
Caridian.
Like, yeah, like, really, the governor, martial law governor to actor, that's you just spin that on the top. Like, you know,
well,
I've left. What do I do now?
Yeah, I think it's what every executioner thinks. You know, I've got to go into hiding. What's the best way to do that?
Perform in
public
front of audiences.
Perform in front of audiences. There you go.
And I have to wonder if he was so dramatic when he was a governor. You know, like, oh, governor, what should we do? We should do whatever you feel we should do.
Yeah. And apparently he memorized all his speeches. I don't even need to read the index card. Oh, yeah, this is the one where I order the people's stuff. I got this one, guys. Right. Gimme. Go Q.
But he also talks about how being the executioner was like playing a part. He talks, you know, I did what I had to do for this, almost the theatricality of it. You know, a part that he's playing, so.
All right. What are the parts you think wouldn't work that you would have to change?
Things that wouldn't work.
Because I guess you think, you know, of Star Trek, not that you can't say this is of all Star Trek, but I think original, especially TOS, that's a lot of it. I mean, there are a lot of TV actors, but a lot of people would be coming from theater, and that TV era, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is very theatrical in how people still thought. So I don't know how much, you know.
I think one of the problems you're going to have is the split bit between the guy who gets poisoned.
Oh, Riley.
And the
Uhura.
Yeah, those two scenes, because you're having to play them separately, and then also have the mysterious hand who puts the poison in the pestle, and,
just like someone dressed in black.
Yeah, and then you don't know if it's a stagehand. It's awkward. Did the stagehand do it?
That's the murder mystery. Like, it wasn't any of the characters. It was the stagehand. But I thought, in the stage production of this, now, would you have Uhura actually sing it, or would you have a recorded voiceover like they did here?
Oh, God, no. She'd have to sing it. She'd have to sing it, because that was bad.
I'm like, could she not have sung it on TV? Like, she obviously would have the skills, but they're like, no, just pre-record it, Nichelle. We're going to play it over and just mouth the words, and, like, it doesn't really, you could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is one where you could have, like, opposite ends of the stage, and so, like, engineering's on one end and the rec room's on the other, so you're get the feeling that it's happening in the same time, but they're on very different locations. But, yeah, I don't know how you would have not seeing the bad guy poison it, but also seeing him enough to know that it's not a stagehand literally poisoning the drink. So, or maybe shift it up, maybe change it from poison to, like, somebody tries to stab him or something, and he still survives, but it's not. I thought they were going to say that he died, like, announced to the crew that he died to keep him safe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that the perpetrator didn't try again. But, you know.
Nope, they just stuck him down in engineering by himself. So. He'll be fine.
Yeah. I like that was Kirk's plan. Like, let's try to get Riley murdered.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe transfer him to, I don't know, like, the bridge. That would maybe be a little safer. A lot of people there.
Security maybe
time.
Might work.
You just see this black hand on the bridge console. But anyway. So, any final thoughts on Conscience of a King?
I don't think
okay,
so.
That's fine. I'd say, so we're going to move on to TNG. And perhaps, I mean, this one obviously came to mind first, and that's Frame of Mind, which is a quick synopsis. Riker is cast in one of Dr. Crusher's many plays, where he plays a crazy man, but as the episode unfolds, he kind of goes in between what he thinks is the stage production of Frame of Mind, and then that actually being the reality that he's stuck in an alien prison going crazy, and it goes back and forth, and then eventually is shown that he is actually being, you know, tortured or whatever in the alien place, and eventually rescued. The end. And then, yeah. So, again, Jessica, did you know the Enterprise D has a community theater program?
I didn't until you mentioned it earlier, which I think, again, fantastic. I
mean, now, Jessica wanted to know, does every starship in the 24th century have a theater program? Y'all?
Not the Defiant.
That's more of a black box, like a one-man, you know, stand-up. That's all I got room for.
I think it's open mic on the Defiant.
Open mic. Open mic. Yeah, it's called the room's called the cloak.
Yeah. Oh, nice. The cloak room.
Yeah, it's as big as a cloak closet. But yeah, no, it's but nobody can direct except for you know,
Dr. Crusher.
So season two was a miss of any theatrical works. She took all her funding with her.
The crew suffered that year. Morale was down.
So, Daniel, what did you think of Frame of Mind?
It's a pretty good episode.
Are you crazy about it?
I'm not crazy. It's good. It's a solid Riker episode. You know, Jonathan Frakes running around screaming a lot and stuff.
Daniel, from the man who loves Dr. Bashir, you're really going to critique Riker on his screaming?
I don't remember anything about Bashir ever screaming.
Okay, I'll let that one go.
yeah, it's good. It's good. It's fun. I do like the element of you never really know what's going on, obviously, until the end. And even you in the audience are kept in the dark of it. So, and it does kind of play with your mind a little bit, because it really tricks you a couple of times into thinking the opposite way that you were thinking. So, yeah, it's good for that.
I like how they never, at least I don't think they ever do the wake up from a dream moment. So there are moments where, you know, he's in the play and you see the audience and then he turns around and then there's a wall there. And that's cool. Like those shift moments where he's like, wait a minute, like the fourth wall is here. That's not supposed to be here. And, you know, just the set design as well, which I know we'll get into, but it's a great little one set with the door. Like, it's very focused, it's very the angular, there's angles everywhere, and it's jagged in a way that's representing, you know, what he's going through. And his hair, my gosh, his hair is just all over the place. But I think the only thing more shocking would have been if he had shaved his beard or something. But
how much of the Inception noise should we have had in this episode?
He's like walking up the walls. But I do also like the single thread of the cut on his head and how that keeps resurfacing, and you know, whether Worf does it or he bumps into something or anything like that. It's a nice little thread. And again, it is and the crewman with the Odo Ridge eyes kind of look, where he just keeps seeing him and he's like, who is this guy? You know, I don't. Although I'm sure apparently he has memorized every face of the 1,000+ members on the Enterprise, but it's a very good spooky movie or you know, episode.
So Jessica, how does this work as a stage production?
I think this is probably the most theatrical. I think, as you say, it gives Riker a lot to do. It's probably a little bit self-indulgent, but it worked in this case. I think the problem is going to be exactly what Darren pointed out as the positives of the show. The set itself and the fact that it shifts and you've got the fourth wall there and that all of a sudden it changes. I think you're going to really struggle with that to make it sort of seamless in the way it was for the television show. And the same thing with the wound. You're going to struggle to have that continue to reappear consistently throughout to sort of give that hint.
I can feel like as an actor, you'd be like, you'd go out and be like, and then come back like, oh, do I have the wound on? Duh! I forgot to put the wound back on.
But that's a good point, because it's almost the opposite problem with the is it a real stage, because you're actually in a theater, and so all of a sudden you have to now convey that he's believing he's in the theater, which is normal, that's easy, but then when it shifts to I'm actually in the prison, but you're not. You're actually in the theater pretending you're in the theater in the prison. And it's like, ooh, that's deep.
Yes, and with and without good sets, you're going to really confuse the audience with that and struggle to keep them engaged, I think.
Engage.
I was just going to say that the thing with the cut on the head is easily fixed because you just have two Jonathan Frakes, so you're totally fine there. But
twins, that old trope.
Hasn't seen that episode, guys.
Yeah, I would do it with like lighting, like every time it's
I could see it. It's up and down.
Yes, yes, I know lighting, but it's I would do it where any time it's supposed to be in the actual prison cell, like everything has red accents, and but then every time when it's on the crew on the ship, like blue accent or something like that. I mean, there's obviously things you could do. You know, I'm trying to keep it not LA, but you know, lighting gels, you know, stuff like that. Everyone's got those. But
yeah, no, I could see that. Yeah, and
yes, yeah.
Also, this whole episode, I kept seeing the woman alien. I'm like, I know who that is. I know, and it's because she's so young. I didn't recognize her. It's Susanna Thompson. That's the Borg Queen.
Oh wow,
from Voyager. Also, for those who watch Arrow, you know. But anyway, but yeah, I was
what?
Like,
wait a minute, who's she in Arrow?
The mother. What's his mother that died?
What?
Yes.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah, she died and became the Borg Queen, obviously.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's not the main Borg Queen, Alice Krieg, but she's the other one on
right.
Right. I didn't know that. I mean, it's been a while since I don't want to give spoilers out for another show. But I didn't know that. Okay, interesting. I'll have to go back and check that out.
Yeah, I had to look her up because, like, I know her from somewhere. I can't figure out what. But anyway. So, yeah, that would be interesting. Have you ever been to a play like that that sort of messed with your mind, either as an audience or where you had to, like...
Yes. And, of course, I did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which this reminded me of a whole lot. Obviously not in the same shifty sort of way, but that, am I insane? Is this where I belong? You've got somebody who's trying to tell you all of those things. It could work. The lighting, that it would have to be very, very sophisticated. The lighting would have to be spot on. You'd have to make the decisions, particularly when it's not always clear to him exactly where he is, and when he's on the ship, but it's not real, and then when the people from the ship are on the crazy hospital, and it gets complicated. I think it would definitely be doable. You'd need a really good lighting designer.
Yeah, because obviously you have the special effects near the end when he's like shooting the phaser and things just start. The scene literally breaks, or people break apart. You know, which brings up the question, Daniel: which Enterprise or which TNG character would represent your personality?
My TNG character would represent my personality.
This is the BuzzFeed section.
Oh, okay. All right. I can get behind that for sure.
But I do like that, like, you know, people just would appear like, oh, yes. You know, and then I was angry, and then, like, Worf appears like, yeah, okay. I know how this works. But yeah. Yeah. So, would the challenge as a director and, you know, performer, if you were in it, the risk of confusing the audience? Because obviously, our Star Trek viewers, we're a sophisticated bunch. We can. But, you know, what would be the risk to your audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be pretty, particularly if you're doing it in just one space, and so you've got all of these shifts that the performers have to make that have to be clear to the audience. I mean, and it's a confusing episode anyway, so trying to figure out how to make it a little bit less confusing, and lights and good acting are about the only thing you can use. Possibly a subtle shift in music to help sort of almost subconsciously.
Oh yeah, maybe
a
background
noise
of a spaceship would sound like this, and the crazy hospital sound like this.
Yeah.
Maybe a series of clicks. No, louder.
Or streaking star lights in the, like, up on the ceiling. But yeah, different ways to make it feel. But, you know, it's very Inception-y because it's like you're in an actual theater, but you're pretending you're on a starship, and then you're pretending you're on a theater inside that starship. Then you're pretending you're a cell that's in the theater that's in the starship, but then it's actually the cell that's on the planet. And then after all that, you wake up and you're actually on the planet, not in the cell. Yeah, let's do another episode for this. That's way too hard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you can even take out the sci-fi element in that one. But anyway, so to wrap up, we have one more episode, which I know we could probably do an entire episode on this episode because it's very famous in DS9 lore and fandom. but that is In the Pale Moonlight. Very famous. And I'm sure, probably doubt people need a summary, but for those who need it, this is the one where Sisko hatches the plan during the Dominion War to bring in the Romulans, and he enlists Garak, so you know things will be simple. And basically, just turns into a conspiracy of where Sisko basically goes deeper and deeper into struggling with, what's right, what's wrong, what's valuable, what is he willing to do, how far is he willing to go, and then we get the very famous "it's a fake" meme. And ends up with a dead Romulan senator, ends up with Ben's wounded pride, but ends up with the Romulans entering the war. So I know this is a very famous or very popular episode. I think people would rank it in the first, second, or third of, at least generally speaking, of DS9 episodes. Just because we're getting edge on time here, Jessica, how did you think this would work as a stage production?
This is definitely my favorite in terms of turning it into a stage production.
Marriage over.
But yeah. just because I think theatrically this one works. You can do the entire thing. Again, if we're working on the stage and then the audience area, which is slightly lower than the stage, you've got Sisko doing his report from the stage. Every time he gets ready to, sort of the flashback where he looks and speaks with the characters, he comes out into the audience and the characters approach him and then he goes back. I think it's incredibly easy to stage. It was a tough episode to watch. I really struggled with this one because of all of the political, the original series, you go very Shakespearean, you go very stylized, even go back as far as the Greeks. Then with TNG, you go sort of existentialist, a little bit more postmodern. And then this is political theater. This is propaganda. It was just a real interesting journey, if you will, to watch those three evolve.
And what about you, Darren? Where are you on in this episode and kind of as you look at it from this particular perspective we're talking about? What do you think works?
Yeah, I agree with Jessica. I would almost see how much you can do with just Ben Sisko. But I mean, I've seen, what was it called? It was a one man with an extra on the stage. It was Screwtape Letters. It was done as a one man show, and where he's just reading his letters, and they had this kind of
Lewis.
Yeah, he had this like demon creature that's kind of like his secretary. That's the Wormwood character, or another. No, it wasn't Wormwood, but it was another, just something else to have something else on the stage. It was very simplified, and I like your thought of him coming out into the theater to do the flashbacks, but I almost think, like, would it even work as just a monologue, like where it's literally him, and maybe you do tiny bits of him interacting with other things or people come into the room, but it almost works as a one man monologue for the, because he's recording his log, and you would have to rewrite the non monologue scenes to be in a dictated style. But I think if you had a really good solid actor, because you're gonna carry the entire thing, though, you could definitely pare it down into like a half hour monologue show easily. Well, not
this
easy.
Would be, and again, you're the director, Jessica, not me, because I don't have an eye for these things. But like, to me, lighting would be a fun part during his monologue, because you could go literally darker, mm-hmm. and when he's wading deeper and deeper in, and just play with that. But Daniel, what do you think about this episode and all these going on?
Well, I mean, I love the episode, but
just because there's a Romulan in it, Daniel, is that all it takes for you?
There are Romulans and Garak, so yeah, I'm sold. I'm completely sold. And that's why I was going to say, I hate Darren's idea. I mean, it may work better. I have no experience in that realm. It may work better, but I think you're losing a lot of the story if you don't actually get to see the character interactions between Sisko and Garak specifically. I mean, you could cut all the rest of it out, I get that. But like, his freak out scene on Garak is super important to his journey in that episode. And you can't do that when he's, you know, when he's just talking about it. So I would, you could cut everything else out. That's fine. But Garrick is super important to that story. And I would not want to cut him out of that. But I totally see what you guys are saying. It is so perfect because here he is. He's just talking to the camera and he would just be talking to the audience and being like, this is what's going on. This is the messed up week I've had. And it seems perfectly suited to that.
I think you could potentially combine those things so that rather than a proper interaction with Garrick, you could almost have Garrick come up toward, like, at the back of the stage in a single spotlight and give his lines, and Sisko never even looks at him, but you can still have that interaction, so it's very clearly a flashback. You still get the responses, but without breaking that monologue feel, even though you're in a dialogue.
Because it almost would be like, not the voices of Sisko, but it would act like the voices of Sisko. You have maybe, you know, Garrick on the right as sort of almost the devil on his shoulder character. Mm. But then you would have, you know, maybe Dax on the left and the various people, you know, in the back, you know, with the lights would come up. But yeah.
What if
I like the idea of just the Romulan senator, like, coming in from the backstage. It's a fake. And then just
and then he, like, disappears into the mist. Or actually, what I just had a thought. So he's giving his log, but what if instead of it being this one time he's recounting the entire thing at the end, we actually see it throughout the story? So it's just his room. We move all the interactions with Garrick to his quarters. And so the first, you know, act is he gives his daily log. You know, he's unbuttoned his shirt. He's, you know, relaxing for the end of the day. And he talks about the wardroom scene with posting the casualty reports, and you're getting into his state, and then he realizes he needs to, you know, bring Garrick, you know, so he calls Garrick to his room, and then he talks to him, and then, like, go to black. Then it's the next, you know, couple days later, he's giving his next log at the end of the day. So do it like that, where you keep the actual interaction of Garrick in the room, but, because I agree with you, Daniel, like, that's one of the most powerful parts of that is the interaction, the interplay. But then do the rest of it as him just describing all these things that we don't see, but that they've happened already. Because that's a part of the power of this log, is, you know, it's already happened. He's describing things, but it's not like, Captain's log, we just arrived at the planet. Wonder what it's going to leave for us. It's like, no, I'm already... So you would be changing his log a little bit in the fact that he's not telling the entire story in one sitting at the end, but more like maybe 5 points throughout the story until you get to the very last one where it's, you know, then he decides to erase. Then he's like, computer, erase my last week of logs.
And then, like, I think the entire theater goes dark at that point.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, and I think that would give you an opportunity to watch the breakdown, costume-wise, you know, the first day he's very you know, and by the end of it, he's all disheveled. And then the same thing that Philip was saying with the lights, you know, each time the lights are just a little bit dimmer. And, you know, if you want to go proper Heart of Darkness Apocalypse Now, you can have a drum beat in the background that slowly gets louder, you know.
That's called the warp core. It powers the ship.
Yeah.
There are things you can do, though, that could make that really interesting.
Yeah, now, if there was a community theater on Deep Space Nine, wouldn't you want to be casting Jadzia? I mean, come on, that Romulan part she does? That's her audition right there. Does improv pretty well, I'm saying. But not, is there a character, I know this is putting you on the spot here, but, like, Garrick, is there a character you can think of from theater that... Because to me, like, you know, if you're trying out for this part and you're like, oh... You know, someone's already chosen for Sisko. Like, okay, well, then I'm going to be Garrick then. Because that's sort of like, I don't say the Iago character. That
I was going to go with Iago. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a red parrot? I don't get it. No. I'm kidding. I know Othello. I'm not uncultured.
Particularly with, you know, I mean, if you're one African-American captain and you've got Iago whispering in his ear.
Oh, well.
So Sisko's Othello, is that what we're saying?
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit. The slow descent into madness with somebody whispering in his ear encouraging it. There are some echoes of that, definitely.
Because this is one of the few times I feel like, you know, outside of this discussion, you almost see full Garak. Like, he's almost given permission. You do your, like, usually it's like, you can do a little bit here. This episode's like, Garak, blank check. Yeah. And he's like, oh man, let me, you know, cracks the knuckles. It's been a while since I've got to do all this stuff, you know. You know, and I like how he just, like, he tells, like, the that one, you know, blue character, Forger, like, and I'll be in your room later to say goodnight.
Yeah. You're like, I think he's oh, like, that dude's hello, dying. And the guy's
that dude's
like,
dead.
I'm dead. I'm so dead. And Sisko's right there, and he's like, Sisko, you're probably picking up on this, but he's like, I was committed.
Oh, cool. Well, any final thoughts about this last powerful episode?
Just, I think the end with his final monologue where he's just listing, he's like, you know, I'm a conspirator and murderer. I covered the crimes of men to cover their other crimes. And just it's a really well written episode. I mean, you can see how it's many people's favorite of Deep Space Nine, and yet it's different in the fact of this whole telling the log, looking at the camera. That's not something we really see in any other parts of Star Trek. Maybe slightly used in other series, but that was a different direction to take this episode, and I think it works for it.
Yeah, you know, one could say, to the chagrin of Philip, that maybe we'll do a whole episode on it someday, and that'd be a lot of fun.
I loved the episode. I thought it was beautifully written. When Philip went to rewatch it, I had to leave the room. I didn't want to see it again because the implications of it, the reality of it, were too much for me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Sort of an evergreen. Possibly an evergreen story throughout the ages. Well, any other final thoughts about any of these episodes or any particular episodes you think I should have chosen?
I was kind of surprised you didn't choose Muse from Voyager.
Oh, no. Well, that's that Belana one?
Actually, I do like that one. But anyway.
Is that that Belana one?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Where she's stranded on the...
Thank you for not choosing that episode.
I'm not saying it's a good episode. I'm just saying it was an episode that deals with theater and with masks, like Greek theater at that. So, but
yeah, Jessica would ask why I didn't choose a Voyager one. It was more just a time, but so I'll have to show that one. I think you would enjoy that one, Jessica.
Okay.
Because basically, long story short, B'Elanna crash lands on a planet
like a Greek older society.
Yeah, but basically a playwright finds her and starts fashioning stories based on her stories about Voyager. So, and it's very interesting.
Oh, that does sound like fun.
And they did a lot of use of masks, and so you'll have a Janeway mask or seven.
You're right. She
masks.
Should watch Masks. That's another one. She.
Oh my goodness!
No.
Oh my goodness! Let's get out of here.
All right. Yes. All right. Well, we're gonna close the curtain on this discussion. I'm hilarious. If folks want to talk to us about what we talked about, they can, of course, always use the hashtag on Twitter, hashtag AskCA3, and in honor of Daniel, that's the number 3. Or they can find us at The Nerd Party at thenerdparty.com/contact, or find us the network on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. And so, Jessica, thanks for coming, of course.
Thanks very much for having me. This was not nearly as scary as I was worried.
This
was
actually
be.
What
Thanks,
I do
guys.
Every week, Jessica. I'm not actually just avoiding you.
So you mostly just sit and talk to yourself in a microphone?
That's what it's. Yeah.
Okay.
We're figments of Philip's imagination. We don't even.
This is. I've just watched another theatrical episode, haven't I?
I'm not crazy. So, Jessica, if people want to talk to you about your ideas, crazy ideas,
crazy
ideas.
Ideas
about theater, where can they find you on
crazy
online?
Ideas. They can find me on Twitter at 1, the number 1, Phoenix Theater, that is theater with an R-E because I'm not a monster.
Oh, we're on the gauntlet.
Yeah.
And Darren, if folks want to learn the... That's so LA version of all these. Where can they reach you?
I'm sorry for the budget we have. They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or my website, drscifi.com.
And Daniel, if people want to reach you about playing the stagehand that poisons people's milk, where can they find you online?
They can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number 1, not the word.
And if folks want to talk to me about how I would play all these parts at the same time, They can find me on Twitter at NCPublicServant.
That's another mask reference right there, Philip. I mean, you're just leading into it.
So, Darren, what wonderful topic are we talking about next week?
Well, next week, we are going to share some of our favorite ships that aren't the Enterprise. I know, I mean, that covers, like, the bulk, but I was trying to push us outside the warp bubble. So we're going to list some of our favorite Federation ships and favorite non-Federation ships. So it's going to be ship-tastic.
All right. Well, the ship will hit the fan with this one. So if folks are, you know, until you hear that next wonderful episode, there are many great shows here on the Nerd Party Network. There's our great new Harry Potter-based show, Outpost, as well as our great other shows during the week, whether it's Nerd Nuptial, a show with your wife. That's boring. or Filibuster, or the shows about Star Wars, including Aggressive Negotiations and Great Shot Kid, as well as Missing Frames and Punch It. So we will see you all next week.
I'm Jessica Nunn.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus. Stranded here in marriage on City Alpha 3.